following program has been brought to you by Barterhouse Wines. For more information, visit www.thebarterhouse.com. Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
All right, everybody, once again, it's Thursday, 1 o'clock, and you have tuned into the Heritage Radio Network. Coming to you live from the back of Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. You're listening to The Farm Report, and I am your host, Aaron Fairbanks. Today, we are on the line with Jesse LaFlame of Pete and Jerry's. Jesse, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Welcome to the show. So great to have you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
So, Pete and Jerry's is not a cartoon with, like, a cat and a mouse. It is actually an egg company up in Monroe, New Hampshire, but not just any egg company. Why don't you give us a little bit of history on the operation? I understand it was started by your great-grandfather?
Right. Shortly after World War II, he came back to the area where he grew up. And, of course, he grew up on a dairy farm or a diversified farm. And his brothers had taken over the family dairy and really kind of bought up a few of the other dairies right in the immediate area, and he thought to himself, you know, chickens, eggs, it doesn't take a lot of land. I might as well give that a shot. So he started out very, very small, about 500 hens, I think, at the time, and slowly over the next two decades built it up with some other family members into a thriving local conventional egg supplier. And my father actually took it over, I think it was in the early 80s, and it continued as a small farm, but the industry, quote-unquote, the egg industry was changing very rapidly along with the supermarket industry at that time with just unbelievable consolidation, industrialization in a lot of ways, and a small egg farm, I think we had 70,000 hens at the most at the time, just couldn't cut it. Wouldn't cut it. Small farm, a smaller farm became a million hens in one place.
Wow. Okay.
So, it's really pretty remarkable. They're now putting a quarter million to a half million hens in a single barn. We'll talk some more about that. But so they really couldn't compete. And my parents grew up during the 70s, came of age during the 70s, and were a little back to earth. Always had organic on their mind, and always wanted to be farmers, of course. And they had the foresight to start experimenting with producing organic eggs, and it worked. And before long, we were tearing out the cages, and they're gone. They're gone for good. And we now produce organic and cage-free eggs exclusively, and we do it with a lot of other family farms, which is probably, in my opinion, one of the most important things that we do. So it's been quite a journey. We've really been lucky to grow.
Yeah, sounds like it. So what is your role in the operation?
I'm really kind of managing everything day to day. So I don't know. Don't really like titles around here, but I guess that would be president or CEO or something. But, with the size of the farm and the business, I mean, we're larger, but we're still, I mean, it's very hands-on. I may be working with the hens one day, meeting with a customer the next day, trying to work out a distribution issue later on. So it's a little bit of everything.
Okay.
Which is great.
And now, it was a little unclear to me when I was checking out your site earlier. So you guys produce organic eggs and non-organic eggs? Or you do both, or you do one or the other, or you're transitioning?
We do both. So we don't do any conventional type eggs produced in cages.
Okay.
Battery cage. So everything is sort of humane. In fact, everything we do is certified humane.
Yeah, you guys do have that sort of. That's a tough certification, too. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. We're quite proud of that. And we were the first egg farm in the country to do it, to be a part of it. You know, the program's continually evolving, and so are we. So it's a great program for all types of livestock. But we started with organic, but we found that there was actually a market niche for cage-free eggs because they are produced with conventional grains, they're not as expensive. So there are people that are worried about primarily animal welfare, but not so much about organic issues. So
sure.
It's a good fit for them. And to be honest, we started that pretty early on when we were producing too many organic eggs. We couldn't sell them all, so it was kind of a little bit of a alternative to, you know, not even break even, but lose a little less money if we had to sell extra eggs during certain times of the year.
Right.
But it's really grown and taken on its own legs, where we have a lot of flocks that are just dedicated to cage-free egg production.
Right. And the chickens are the same. The growing practices are the same. It's just the feed that's different. Is that right?
That's exactly it. Yeah, the barns are almost identical. Really very, very similar. There's not much difference at all, just those grains. And organic grains are, you know, I'm a big believer in organic. But organic grains are expensive. That's the one reason, you know, there's a million reasons to buy organic food. The one reason not to is because it's expensive.
Sure. And can you give us a sense, I mean, between an organic kind of feed mix and a non-organic, just as a percentage, or like what is the difference in cost there?
Organic grain, they don't always move together, but typically the grain ration for the hens, which is mostly corn and soybean and some wheat and flaxseed and alfalfa and some other things, but mostly corn and soybean, it can tend to, in organic, it's generally at least double.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay.
Yeah, so it adds a lot of cost. And we feed the hens organic grain from their second day of life, really, as soon as we get the chicks. So that, you know, it all kind of adds cost over time.
Absolutely. Well, what I would love to do with you is kind of start at the beginning and just kind of, if you can walk us through what are some of the different decisions and kind of how the chickens spend their life, and then, you know, talk a little bit about your processing and distribution network. So you guys do work with a hatchery in upstate New York, is that correct?
Yeah, that's our largest supplier, and they're a small family-run hatchery. They do a really, really nice job. So, you know, we like to work with smaller companies when we can, and yeah, it's a funny process when the chicks show up. And to give people an idea, a hen barn, you know, these are bigger than backyard flocks, but they'll hold typically between 5,000 and really at the most like 19,000 hens, which, again, to some people probably sounds like a lot, but in a day and age where there aren't many people involved in farming and caged barns hold a 250,000 hens in each, they're really pretty small. So with the baby chicks, they show up on, we call it the chick truck, and it shows up with baskets of 100 baby chicks in each, and we put the chicks out on shavings for their first few weeks of life, and it's kind of a warm, it's a nice, warm, cozy environment. They have feed and water anywhere they want it, and the chicks are just hilarious when they first come in, just these little balls of fuzz. And they sort of they move around in groups and throughout the house, and they follow. If you're in the barn with somebody and talking to a person, if you stand 20 feet apart, inevitably there'll be a group of chicks that will congregate in between you, and whoever's talking, the chicks will run to that person, and then when the conversation gets to the other person, they'll run back. So that's always a lot of fun when they come. We raise them until about 16 or 17 weeks of age in that separate growing space.
Uh-huh.
And then they're brought to the main farm or to our farmers, and where the egg laying happens. And to describe those barns, they're sort of these big, wide open spaces with the key part of it is nesting, roosting, and feeding systems within the barns. So,
oh, wait, you know what? Can I interrupt? I want to hold up 1 second because
yeah.
I have a few questions about the hatchery. I don't know this. You know, obviously, there's not a big use for male chickens in an egg farm because they don't lay eggs. So,
right,
how is the egg to, or the hatching technology evolved? Can they breed or I'm not sure what the terminology is. Maybe you can help me out, for a particular sex, or do they sex them at birth? And kind of what happens to the males, and kind of how does that work? At the very
sure.
kind of beginning stages.
Sure, no, and it's an important question. It's an important thing for people to know. We like to be as honest as possible, and it's actually one of the reasons we work with this hatchery in upstate New York. So there, scientists are working on technology to basically sex the chicks when they're in the egg. They have not fully developed that yet. So males are hatched out, and you know, males in agriculture, a friend of mine, an egg farmer, always says, you know, being a male in agriculture is good work if you can get it.
Well, yeah, and that's true for every, you know, for all livestock,
for
really.
Right, all types of livestock. So, again, perfectly honest, the male hens, the vast majority of them are euthanized. And the way that's done at this hatchery, and again, it's why we work with them, is they're basically they're put into the baskets, and CO2 gas is used to do that. So it's a very calm, humane way to do it. I think it's probably the most humane way that you could do it.
Sure. I mean, obviously, it also falls under your certification. So, I mean, that is kind of the industry standard. And I'm assuming that then, you know, the ratio is somewhere around 50-50 as it is generally in nature, or?
Right. Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Okay, cool.
So it's, you know, it's one of the more unfortunate things, and we're reading and waiting and can't wait until, you know, the science is developed that doesn't need to happen. But you know, at this point, we're doing the best we can.
Yeah, no, of course. And I, you know, it's something I'm constantly surprised myself by, these kind of obvious natural facts about food production that are just not on my radar at all. And, you know, having spent a lot of time, especially this past year, talking about the role of males on farms in general, in particular with a goat project that I was working on early this year, I never even thought about it with chickens, even though I knew that. And you know, that is one of those issues that I think is just kind of really off the radar for obvious reasons. So let's not dwell on it anymore, I guess. But I just wanted to share that because I think it is like one of those important considerations when people are like making choices about what to eat, to really kind of understand kind of the whole production scope. So you have the chicken, you get the chicks, they spend the first 16 to 17 weeks in a separate barn. And then at that point, are they starting to lay, or do they have a little transition when they move into the laying area before they start to produce
they're
eggs?
They're just about to, usually about a week or two at the most away from starting to lay some eggs. So when they move into the laying barns, we have these nest systems, which are pretty cool. They're called community nests, and they actually look like a row of doghouses, one right after the other, and with a, you know, sort of 4-foot opening and red curtains. Hens like their privacy. they can go in, and the floor is actually sloped, and it's astroturf. So they go in and scratch around a little bit and make themselves a nest, basically, with, you know, where they're content. And lay an egg. And some of the hens, we call them broody hens. They like to spend all day on the nest if they can, and they think that they're sitting on their eggs and everyone else's. And then there are the social butterflies who like to get in and out as quickly as possible and get on with eating and socializing. So the nests are a big part of it, and then feeding and watering and roosting and scratching is another big piece. The barns, and it's actually as part of certified humane standards, there has to be at least 15% of the surface, the floor area in the barn, that the hens can scratch around. And that's a big deal for hens. You know, it's a very big natural behavior for them to scratch and look for, you know, I mean, the instinct is to look for bugs and insects and everything else that they do. And feed is always available in front of the hens. The feed systems run, you know, and run out a good depth of feed at least 7 times a day. Water's always available. And roosting, because there's always timid hens that want to get up. You know, they go down and they eat, and then they get back up on a roost and kind of get out of the fray from the other hens. So it's a pretty good life inside those barns when they're inside. Nice way to be.
Yeah. What is there, do you guys work with a particular breed of chicken?
Yeah, we like it's a breed called a Babcock Brown, which I guess originates from France, and they're all sort of you know, derivations of a white Leghorn mixed with a New Hampshire Red or something like that, or Rhode Island Red. So they're definitely they're sort of bred to lay a lot of eggs. I mean, that's important.
Of course.
You know, to make sure that we can sell the eggs as inexpensively as possible, but they're funny. I mean, they're all personality, and they are busy, and they are social.
Jesse, we're going to take a quick break, but before we do, can you let us know what is the website? So you have some great pictures of the hens and of kind of the barns where they live, and I want people to be able to take a look at that during the break if they want.
Oh, cool. Yeah, it's www.peteandjerrys.com, and it's Jerry with a G.
Awesome.
And it's spelled out, so peteandjerrys.com.
All right, we'll take a quick minute, and we'll come back, and we'll talk about the egg side of the chicken production.
When you open the bottle and you drink the wine, it speaks for itself. Is it, you know, a wine that's made for food? Yes. Those types of wines are tend to be more rustic or have a little bit more body. Are there wines that are just pure out hedonistic pleasure? Sure, there's wines like that that maybe from California that are more cocktail wines or wines that are just big jammy fruit bombs. And those, I think, appeal to a certain group of people as well. I think the wines that Barterhouse specializes in is more of these food-friendly, you know, rustic style, biodynamic, organic wines that tend to be a bit more earthy, come from someplace. So you can almost taste the terroir. You can almost feel this guy, this Sancerre was grown in this slaty, rocky soil. And so to me, that's the exciting part, that the wine feels like it comes from someplace.
All right, we're bringing it back. We are talking eggs on the line with Jesse LaFlame of Pete and Jerry's. So, Jesse, before the break, we were talking about kind of how the spaces where the chickens are laying their eggs, and how does the collection work? And, I mean, in my head, I'm imagining this kind of Veruca Salt contraption where the egg, like, drops into some magical system. But is that how it works, or are they collected by hand? I mean, when you have that many eggs, like, how does that work?
It's pretty cool, and it's actually relatively simple. Because that AstroTurf floor is sloped, the eggs just sort of roll back through, and they roll back behind the nest where there's a belt, a conveyor belt. And some of these belts can be, you know, several hundred feet long, and they'll be, you know, by the middle of the day, they'll just be full of eggs. So the conveyor belts run forward where the eggs are either collected by hand or by mechanical systems that'll put six eggs in an egg tray or other conveyor systems at a time. So it's relatively simple, and it's a pretty cool process. The labor reduction is pretty remarkable compared to what my grandfather used to do when he, you know, very first started, and even my great grandfather and great uncle who did a little bit with eggs. So very, very different. That's one of the great things. I mean, with organic and cage free production growing popularity, farming growing, that the companies that make this type of equipment have started concentrating on this again and coming up with inventive new ways to collect the eggs and not have them damaged and make the entire thing more efficient. So
yeah,
helps with the cost.
So you have your original facility, but then you guys also partner with a number of family farms from the region. So how do the eggs from those farms kind of make their way to the production? Because there's just one production facility, correct, for the washing and packaging?
We've actually started working with another family operation that has a standalone egg processing plant closer to some of the farms that we work with, and they're doing a great job with our oversight. So that's helping. It's all about cutting down on food miles. But the family farms, this is one of the things that it's just a mission of ours. It's one of the things I'm most proud of. We're lucky. We're growing really quickly, and we're in a area that's growing really quickly. And traditionally in this egg industry, it's been vertical integration. Get rid of all the, you know, farmers that you might be working with, do it all yourself, get rid of the feed mill, you can do it yourself. You know, all these things that make these companies big industrial agribusinesses.
Right.
And, you know, we stepped back and as we started to grow, and, you know, we built a few barns here and there on our own site and said, you know, wait a minute, this isn't what our customers want to see us do. This isn't what we're about. So we started partnering with family farms throughout the Northeast, and, you know, the we're now actually within a few months, I think we're going to be close to 30 family farms that we're working with. And they're really of all sizes and just, you know, remarkable people who just want to be farmers. You know, they don't want to process eggs.
Right.
They don't want to sell eggs. You know, they don't want to deal with all the headaches of having too many eggs or not enough eggs and food safety audits, although they do go through some of those for us. But, you know, all those things that we deal with, they just want to be farmers. And you know, that sounds basic, but in today's agriculture, that's actually becoming hard to do. You know, these big farms, even if families own them, they're not so much farmers anymore. They're managers of people and assets.
Yeah, and I think, you know, kind of you're touching on some of the realities of what we pay, what we as consumers pay for when we make selections in the grocery store. I mean, obviously, the reason the food system has moved towards the vertical integrated systems is because you can make more money, like fewer people can make more money. And the model that you guys are choosing to engage with spreads that money out across a variety of people, all of the different farms that you work with, in addition to the feed mills and the hatcheries. And, you know, if you guys were doing that all yourself, all those different families would not be able to kind of support themselves in the same way. And I think that's a really admirable mission for a company to take on, because it is taking a step away from just a strictly profit-driven incentive.
Well, thank you. And that's, you know, we feel that's what our customers would expect of us, and that's what we're doing. And make no mistake about it, I mean, the farmers we're working with, you know, they're entrepreneurs too. I mean, it's you know, they're running small businesses too, and I have so much respect for these people that, you know, they're taking on a lot of debt to build a barn to take care of hens for us. You know, and they work 7 days a week. You know, it's quite admirable.
So how? Let's not jump around too much here. I guess I want to stay on track. So how is it that the eggs go from the farms to the kind of packing sites?
Sure. So on each of the contract farms, they typically, well, sort of at the end of that conveyor belt that's within the nest, they'll have a hand packing area, or they'll actually have one of those packing machines that puts six eggs on a tray at a time, and they're packed on egg flats, we call them. People have probably seen those. They hold 30 eggs at a time, and they build a stack of six of those, and we have these special pallet systems that hold layers of these flats, and it's typically 900 dozen to a pallet. So they'll sort of build these pallets, and they'll have a cooler on site that they keep them in for a few days or for up to a week, which is still very fresh. And we'll send our trucks around, and typically our trucks will leave the egg processing plant here full of eggs to go out to the markets or distributors for delivery. And rather than having them come back empty, we have our trucks go out to these family farms
and
pick eggs up. So it's, you know, food miles, it's always a complicated issue, very complicated, sort of like wine from California actually has a higher carbon footprint than wine from France if it's going to New York City, that kind of thing. It's always complicated, but we're, you know, we look at the food miles as really being, you know, how far the driver has to go from the last delivery stop to go out to the farm and then return to the processing plant.
Right.
And you know, the system works really pretty well, and from there, the in the processing plant, the eggs are basically put on. I was talking about Rube Goldberg machines. It's a pretty crazy Rube Goldberg egg processing machine that has been developed for the sort of commercial egg industry, where, you know, millions of eggs go through these machines in a day in some cases. But they're set on the system where they're washed, and with the organic eggs, we have to actually use an organic approved, very light detergent, and they're scrubbed in hot water, and use a really light sanitizing rinse, which is a light chlorine, usually you know, not that many parts per million. They're dried, inspected, and then weighed. They're checked for cracks with an acoustic system, which is pretty cool too. It can actually find the cracks and find where the crack is and how bad it is, and those are rejected, of course. The eggs are put in the cartons, put into cases, and sent out to market. So it's a pretty streamlined and pretty efficient process. and we turn our eggs around as quickly as we can. Really, freshness is a big deal for us and for our customers.
Sure, sure. So the eggs that need, why is it that the eggs need to get washed? I mean, and why is it that detergent is something that's like necessary? And
sure,
yeah.
It's the funny thing is in Europe, it's actually a USDA requirement that eggs are washed. And in Europe, it's actually a requirement that they not be washed. And of course, they don't refrigerate over there. So it's, you know, I guess it's, some of it's our preoccupation with sanitation, which is sometimes misguided in this country, as we know. The reason, is it a necessity? You know, I really don't think so. I mean, I guess the logic is that if there was some sort of contamination on the shell and somebody cracked it and, you know, there was intermingling, that could be an issue.
Right.
But they seem to do pretty well over in Europe without issue.
Right. And that's not an option that you guys are choosing. That's the requirement.
Right. Right. Exactly. And when I say detergent, people are thinking laundry detergent. It is not that. It's, again, it's an organic approved substance. So it's actually a citrus-based product that we use, and it just basically kind of increases the pH and does some things to help the wash process remove any kind of material that might be on the shell. And one of the main reasons in this country that eggs need to be refrigerated, there's a natural coating that the hen puts on the egg when it's laid called a cuticle, which you really can't see, but it basically seals pores on the shell of the egg. There's 300,000 pores on the shell of an egg, microscopic. So when we wash eggs, we wash that away and kind of open those up. So an egg that's unwashed can do quite well out of refrigeration because of that cuticle. An egg that's washed really needs to be refrigerated or it will deteriorate somewhat quickly. It's an interesting fact.
Oh, I didn't know that. So you mentioned, I mean, we you talked a little bit about timeline as far as when, how long the eggs stay at the farm. But what is the timeline of an egg? I mean, is there a particular timeline in which it can be considered or labeled fresh? I mean, how regulated is that? And then as far as consumption, I mean, I know that eggs I've had in my fridge can be good after, you know, months. So what are the standards that you guys have to adhere to?
It always kind of cracks me up because the USDA, sort of how they describe the litmus test for is an egg okay is, does it look like an egg, and does it smell like an egg, or not smell like something else, I guess. So it's really soft on expiration codes. We generally put a 45-day expiration code on our eggs, used by, but it can go a good bit longer. Eggs really do keep remarkably well, especially in refrigeration. I mean, it can go months. One thing we typically like to process the eggs within a week of being in our processing plant, so that that egg will be no more than 2 weeks old at the oldest by the time it hits store shelves, really, or very close to it. And that's kind of the end of it. Usually it's within days that the eggs are through our system and out. And we know we're doing a good job when we start to get complaints from people about having trouble hard boiling our eggs,
right?
Or they're complaining that the whites are cloudy. There's something wrong with your eggs. The whites are cloudy. Well, they're really fresh. that's what happens. And then hard-boiled eggs, of course, they won't peel if they're too fresh. They need to be at least a couple weeks old to peel well, at least. So it's always funny. People get upset about those things.
Well, there's a couple other things I want to touch on. We're almost out of time. I wanted to give you a chance to talk a little bit about some of the other sustainability initiatives that you guys have taken on, in particular the packaging for your eggs, and then maybe if you can just very briefly talk about the refrigeration systems that you guys are using.
Sure. Yeah, we're using with the packaging. We're pretty proud of it because it's 100% recycled plastic, soda bottle plastic egg carton. We worked with our supplier to make that happen, and for a couple reasons. One, it creates regional demand for recycled soda bottle plastic. And depending on where you are, sometimes there isn't enough demand for it, or depending on what the market is doing for recycled plastic. So, it's a second life on soda bottles, which is really cool. And then with plastic, if it's recycled again, which is what we hope our customers are doing, it can have at least 7 more lives as other products or egg cartons again after that. The other component to the recycled plastic is that it actually really takes care of the eggs very well. We have less damage, which again means less wasted food and less food miles and everything else. And our customers can see the product. It's clear. They can see if the eggs are good and how they look. So that's been great. And we're working on working with the carton manufacturers on a new carton that will actually have 20% less plastic just out of some of the design elements. So that's pretty cool too. People don't realize, they think that pulp egg cartons are sort of the best in terms of a carbon footprint, but they're really not, because it takes so much energy to actually form and dry those egg cartons when they're made. I mean, the biggest cost of an egg carton is actually the energy used to dry it. And people assume that if they throw something away, it's going to biodegrade, and it doesn't. We've actually dug into landfills, scientists have dug into landfills and dug up newspapers from the 1930s and been able to read them. In a landfill, when things are away from oxygen, they don't break down. So unless you're composting a cardboard egg carton, it's going to be around for a while too. But your other question on the refrigeration, I'm also pretty proud of that. And we're very fortunate to come across a company called FreeAir, and they developed a system which is great for our northern climate, where it actually measures the temperature in our cooler, outside of our cooler, and has a computer controller that shuts down our refrigeration systems if the temperature outside is below 45 degrees, which is what we need to keep our coolers at. And the system pulls in air from the outside. So it's been a tremendous energy savings for us, tremendous carbon output savings. And the other thing that's pretty cool about it is refrigeration systems are really dumb, and they just keep running no matter whether they're getting colder or not. They just run and run and run. And this thing measures the sort of the air handlers and shuts the compressors down and saves a lot of energy too. So it's a simple, relatively simple thing, not a huge expense, but it saved a lot of energy. And we're trying to do all the little things we can with windows in the barns, and we can shut down lights in the barns during the day for the hens that are in there, and that there's enough light, and using fluorescent bulbs or even LED lights, to conserve energy. It's always fun too. It's just trying to keep up with the cutting edge of what's going on out there.
Yeah, lots of opportunities for that. Well, Jesse, thank you so much for being on the show today. I know I would love to have you back, because I have a ton of unanswered questions. So much fascinating stuff to talk about. People can learn more about Pete and Jerry's by visiting the website, www.peteandjerrys.com. And please tune in next Thursday for another episode of The Farm Report, 1 o'clock. We'll see you then.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. Can the fish come back to South Street? On December 18th, the New Amsterdam Market will pay homage to the Old Fulton Fish Market by including a special section dedicated to the fisheries of the Northeast and New England with Sea to Table. Sea to Table partners with fishermen in the recovering fisheries of the Northeast. Their transparent model, delivering fish direct from docks to chefs across America, supports the traditional fisheries that are crucial to the survival of our working waterfronts. For the first time, Sea to Table will join the market to offer fresh fish direct from independent Northeast fishermen. The collaboration of Sea to Table with New Amsterdam will take us back in time for a day to the era when fishmongers dominated Lower Manhattan. So stop by the New Amsterdam Market at Peck Slip and South Street in Manhattan on December 18th and support your local fishermen and fisheries. For more information on Sea to Table, visit www.seatotable.com. That's C, SEA2table.com.